line between daily reality and the dream, but rather constantly intermixes the two. So I look at MTV, first of all, because I find it aesthetically interesting. The second reason is because when I taught systematic theology for about 6 years, I always used Michael Jackson as my image of the Christ. This drove the other faculty crazy for many reasons. I think primarily because they were racist. But also because they couldn't deal very well with anything that approached androgyny. The rest of the faculty, by and large, and a lot of the students, wanted it very clear who was male and who was female. And any suggestion that we aren't in two neat boxes really upset them a lot. MTV, I have to say, is largely heterosexist in its presuppositions and fairly clear in the dichotomizing of male and female, except you often get the suggestion that these categories aren't that neat either. And part of the fun is people who audaciously become gender differentiated in new ways, to use a heavy label. The third reason I like MTV is because it is quintessential capitalism of the free market variety. This is somebody was smart in thinking of MTV, because what MTV does is generate constant interest in new products. Capitalism will never die so long as we can make CDs and tapes. The top 40 is a way of keeping need constantly fed. And many of the tapes that we'll see this evening were very popular a few months ago, and now we can hardly remember them because there are new ones that we have to go out to Tower Records and buy quickly. So I like it because it doesn't try to cover this up. It doesn't pretend that there's not money involved. It just goes for it. The next reason I like MTV is because it is a beautiful articulation of the search for self. I think especially in young people, and if you watch MTV rather than VH1, you get two very different answers, kinds of answers to these questions. Questions of how can we be selves in this modern era? And a lot of that answer has to do with social justice themes. So I really got hooked, because when I started watching MTV after I was fired, I had a little time, decided I'd keep cable because I have to watch the Celtics, and so there were these other channels. And I watched MTV and discovered Tracy Chapman singing about revolution and Bobby McFerrin doing the wildest stuff with this song that everybody thought was a peon to hedonism, Don't Worry, Be Happy. But if you saw the video, you realize he's talking about economic oppression. And when the landlord says pay the rent and you can't pay the rent, so there's this wonderful multi-layering of meaning in MTV. Now, the final thing I'll say before we turn to specific videos, and at any time, please interrupt, or not during the video, because I like to watch them all the way through, but when I'm talking or we have conversation between them, don't hesitate to say whatever is on your mind or heart. The last thing I want to say about MTV is that much of it is rather thoroughly sexist and degrading of women. That is not the strand of MTV I'm going to talk about tonight, because everybody who does critical evaluation of MTV does that already, including the guy out at Amherst who was in the news about a month ago. By my not addressing it, I do not mean to suggest that I don't take this seriously, don't find it repulsive what is done with violence and women on some videos in MTV. So my focusing on another dimension is in no way to suggest that I want to justify or legitimate the violence against women and using women purely as objects that happens in a lot of MTV videos. It also happens that men are sometimes used that way. Well, that's a whole other, there's a wonderful parody video, but And sometimes Jesse Helms and some other people cheer about MTV. I don't think Jesse's ever watched it, but then you never know. They know so little about MTV that they want some videos which are really parodies of the whole strand of MTV, and they think they're the real things. And they go, and that's really fun. So the set that I've chosen tonight is MTV as contemporary morality plays. I don't know if you're familiar with the medieval morality plays. Rather, in a room like this, they would take place and portray in an analogical sense issues of moral, of burning moral concern for the populace of the town. MTV is global, friends. There is no other medium that reaches more people on the planet than MTV. And it will be even more pervasive in the coming year when it will finally get into certain parts of Asia where it hasn't yet been. But by that point, it will be literally global. And the moral concerns, interestingly enough, become ever more unified through devices like this technology. So you can play certain tapes in East Germany, in Tanzania, and in Brooklyn, and the young people already know all the words, or at least all the words that you can figure out on any given tape. And it's not always possible to figure them all out. Okay, the first two tapes, whoops, I better get out my sheet here. The first two tapes, and I'll just play them both through and then we'll talk a bit about them, are both, I would call them the hope for the future is in the young. That is because they are tapes about the response of young people to the new world, the emerging new world order. The first is Scorpion, Winds of Change. And the second is Jesus Jones, right here, right now. Okay? Got it. Balcony.
Can we get the light?
Where the
There is a particularity to the moment which is exceptional, and they both celebrate the possibility of being exactly where you ought to be when Kairos is. Interesting theme, I hadn't thought of before. If you would, just for watching these two videos, talk about what happens visually. What are the characteristics going on here of the visuals of these videos?
It's got really short clips, and it's kind of like information overload. But the thing I was noticing was how they're very, very short, so you can't really figure out what they are just from seeing them for the first time, unless you've seen them before. And the other thing is that they're video sampling. It's just like rap music and other kinds of music, when they sample other people's songs and work a rhythm track or work a bass thing or something like that, or some little singing part into some other song. They're using information as an instrument.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Any other perceptions of the video aspect of it? Go ahead.
Lots of movement.
It's hardly ever a static screen. Constantly moving. Go ahead.
And the first one, I saw an awful lot of images of war. Constantly.
War and change.
Berlin Wall.
Berlin Wall coming down. There are a lot of peace images. It might have been hard to see on this screen, but the majority were peace images rather than war images. But you're right, they were certainly in there.
In both cases, the band itself was shown quite a bit.
Yes, this is one of the most fascinating parts of it, is the what I call, when I analyze them technically, the the universality of time and space. The band wasn't playing really at the Berlin Wall, etc., and some bands were, but not here. But it doesn't matter. You can be in, via this medium, you can be in any time and in any place, or you can be in several places at the same time. We know logically that's not possible. But what's happening here is that in this imaginative stating of the world, you are no longer subject to gravity in the same way that you are on planet Earth, and you aren't subject to time in the same way. And those are the same themes in fairy tales, the same themes in morality plays, and the same things in a lot of Hollywood movies, especially Wizard of Oz and Paradigm. Other things that you saw visually.
Well, the second one, you talked about stepping out of history, and you were talking about the Kairos moment and the fact that, you know, we're not locked into it. It's kind of a challenging idea.
Yeah, and it could be just a very good example also of what David's lecture was about this morning, this notion that to be in America, and these aren't simply American groups, but it doesn't really matter in that dream sense, is to be able to move beyond the constraints of America. That's a very strong theme here.
It feels very hopeful and upbeat.
Yes, and that's partly a function of the music and also of the visuals, that you never get bogged down. You constantly are, there's constantly the possibility of something better. And it's visually present. Go ahead.
I like the Jesus Jones tape, because I often watch MTV. But it talks about being in history right now. It makes me relate, because he's sitting on the couch the way I do with my friends, watching the tube. Because that's the only way I'm into history. You know, we sit down and have a pizza for dinner around the tube, and we go, yeah, look at this, the Berlin Wall fell. I mean, it relates right back.
I think it's a brilliant technique in that video. And then it provokes the question, you know, are you in a position to create your own future if you're sitting in front of the TV only? You know? And I am not one to bash TV. I think television is a marvelous medium if it's used wisely. One of my sisters teaches Montessori. She was just telling me that before I came here, that she's seeing in kids who watch television like a lot of hours a day and who play Nintendo, they are unable to create mental pictures. And some people argue that that's happening here, and especially my age, people who grew up in the 60s. Oh, this is terrible stuff, they say, because you don't create your own visuals. Well, I say bull. I mean, you can create your own visuals if you don't let this be the only visual in your brain. And it's a wonderful option. So other things visually, there are a couple of more distinctive things at least.
I was struck by the blending in and out of black and white and color.
Isn't that fascinating? The blending of black and white, I think, is just one of the most provocative subversion of the dominant devices that you can find. To say that the world is neither all black and white nor all color, but a mix, is really a way of saying, don't tell us that your version of the truth is the only version. There are multiple versions.
One of the things that's obvious in both of those, and in almost all the videos you see on MTV, is the film quality, which means that they put not only considerable time and effort, but huge amounts of money into each video, many of them costing more than $1 million or $2 million for a 4-minute segment, which says to me then that what the kids are being shown means that everything that they measure against in the real world, they also measure against these things that are very commercially successful because they've had such huge budgets to start with.
See, there I think we can get into a wonderful conversation, and maybe we can pursue this tomorrow as well, because I'm not convinced that the majority of young people and older people watching MTV take this in a literally, directly referential way. That is, just as when we were kids, we read fairy tales. I was just reading with my niece Greek mythology. She loves that stuff. It's like a modern soap opera in the old days. But she doesn't assume that this happened. She's only 8, but she knows that this isn't real. This is food for imagination. And I think that the majority of young people are quite able to make that distinction, at least watching this.
I'm just...
Oh, young people, don't just let me talk like that, say.
I was just going to say, it makes it more difficult to concentrate on things or to deal with matters that are presented in different and less crafted ways.
I misunderstood you. I didn't hear you right. I think you're absolutely on target. Yes, exactly. What do you do in confirmation class when this is going on? Now, hold your comments. I want to go ahead and do two more, and we'll follow some of the same themes through. The next, I'll do one individually, because I think it merits a lot of conversation. We'll see if it does, and if you could help me, I'd be in your debt forever, or at least until tomorrow, whichever comes first. The next one is Living Color. The song is called Type, Everything is Possible. And I, well, just show it.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you.
is all repeatable. It's part of it. What is your reaction to that video? Excellent is up here.
It didn't seem to be any time. It was all past, present, future. We're all...
Everything that goes around comes around is the relevant line and the
I was thinking more of the visual stuff, the things from the past. Suddenly the future was there and it was all present and now, but it was all past and it's all going to be future.
Mm-hmm. Like there's an equally relevant line in terms of everything's possible, nothing is real.
I don't know if we all caught that. Everything is possible, nothing is real is the most repeated line in the chorus. I think it summarizes since Reagan.
I saw it as black and white and living color, not very subtle.
It depends on how you define subtlety, but that's a taste issue. So that's your experience, and that has to be.
I was wondering what was this older man with the bomb, and he appeared to be eating the guts of the bomb. At the end, or something.
Yeah. Serving the world.
It was the earth.
Oh, I couldn't see it quite clearly.
And I think it's just. He's very excited about that part of the video.
I think one of the interesting things about this group musically is that they are breaking the stereotype that most black groups play R&B and rap and soul, and white groups play hard rock and heavy metal. This is a rock, heavy metal song, and that's mostly what they play. And I think that's one line that they're trying to erase, is that line that's been set in rock music itself.
Yes. And the fact that it's African Americans doing this particular video, I think is crucial for that reason, but also because it's set in the South Bronx looking over at Manhattan. And knowing what we know about the situation of African American males, that the lyrics are a summary of what it means to be African American male in this culture if you aren't rich. So thank you, but that's a very helpful contribution on the music itself.
Yes. The incredible sophistication of the political consciousness in this thing, of the principalities and powers that rule the city and control it, you know, and where this is where the truth is concealed, and the whole image of the white ruling class carving up the world and stuff in their mouth. I mean, you can't hardly ask for a more strong political statement.
Exactly. And I like how it connects when they're sitting in the chair reaching for the images of stardom and all that. The ruling class is empowered by that kind of desire on the part of the rest of us. That connection, I think, is really brilliant.
I'd like to hear from some of the young people who see a lot of this, if they see what we're talking about. My kids turn this on and go into the bathroom and continue to put their makeup on or whatever and have this as background for how they're getting their day started or something like that. Probably the way I use VH1 when I'm reading or something. You know what I mean? In other words, this is very visual, but my kids, the first thing they tell you is got a great beat, which I think I would agree.
Anybody under 35?
It depends on the video. I mean, I think it's true that we really are remote controlled things. A lot of times I'll turn on MTV and watch for like 5 minutes and then flip. But it just depends. There's certain videos, depending upon the group, where there's a lot of consciousness involved and they're actually thinking about the world. There's a lot of images that are really interesting, but there's others that are just fluff.
Right.
Think about one more where we notice the political consciousness of it, because this group is so obviously breaking the stereotypes that most of them have. That's really obvious to younger people. That's one of the things that when you read about the group, that's the first thing that comes out about this particular group.
So you use the MTV itself in somewhat the same series of images, and you can use the remote control to control the flow of images yourself. Which is wonderfully makes sense.
Well, it's a little different. We have something like this. I'm from Canada. It's Much Music, it's called. And it's an MTV style, but it's not quite. I find MTV a little different. It's got a lot of little shows and programs that are really off the wall for me. But it's the same kind of thing with videos after, constantly going.
Do you get VH1 up there?
No, I've never heard of it.
It's what you're describing sounds a little like VH1, which is
marketed to an older audience in the U.S. I don't know how it would be marketed then in Canada. Other comments about this before we go on to the next one?
I guess I'm a little troubled by your emphasis that MTV's purpose is to make a statement. I think some of the groups may have maybe that purpose. I know an executive, or I've known him for MTV, high up exec money, and that's the emphasis.
I have no quarrel with that. I would be very surprised if that were not the case. Yeah, thank you for saying what you said, because I don't want to give the impression that I think people sit in Manhattan at MTV headquarters trying to say, well, maybe some of them do, I don't know, but profit is what's at issue here, pure and simple. But at the same time, there are groups that are concerned about the morality of capitalism itself, the morality of white racism, etc. And that's what I want to highlight in this phenomenon, at tonight, anyhow.
I just
finally, social justice is profit.
I just wanted to say that even the groups know that there's a Dire Straits song that talks about MTV's there to sell refrigerators.
Yeah.
And MTV puts it on. I mean, so they do just do it for making money. And they'll say, yeah.
I think the mistake would be to think that MTV is in any sense exceptional in this culture.
It's weird because, I mean, in this particular song, they're sitting here and they show all these images of TV and all these people watching TV and these kids sitting in front of the TV hypnotized. And then the singer and the drummer stop strumming for a second, the drums keep going, and he points at the camera and they're saying, you know, turn the TV off. Go do something else. Go think about something. Don't use this as your only source of information. It's really kind of odd that the MTV people let it go. And there's a Jamaican poet, musician, who's got a song. He's got a poem or a thing. His name's Luta Baruka. And he has a poem, a song called Revolutionary Words Have Become Entertainment. And this kind of thing is kind of weird because it's like the opportunity is here for somebody to really look at it. And they're blatantly saying, look at this, look at, you know, these last videos we saw, listen to what they're saying. But then there's the chance that, you know, I walk around in college and these people are sitting around playing volleyball or whatever, or sunbathing or drinking beer, and they're listening to some old Bob Marley record from 20 years ago that's talking about overthrowing capitalism. And they're kind of, oh, this is fun. And that's exactly what this Mutabaruka guy is talking about. It all depends on what somebody puts into it somewhere.
Which I think is a perfectly marvelous point, that there is no intrinsic meaning in the video itself. It's always in the interaction with who's listening. Mm-hmm. One more comment, then we'll go to the next one.
What about the one, I can't remember the singer, Paul Simon, what about the poor, the homeless? Mm-hmm. If that doesn't get you in the gut when you see that, I think that's the little girl crying and the man walks by, and then he acts, you see the whole thing as he's singing it. And we used it at the California Youth Gathering, and the kids respond to that, and I thought it was a good use of
it. Yeah. That reminds me to say one thing. There's no way, and I've tried it actually, maybe you all can, but I certainly can't, say in words what the visual is as quickly as the visual happens. The visual part of the brain is much more rapid than the verbal part of the brain. And I think that's a useful thing to know pedagogically. We underestimate that, I think, in church education, certainly. Now let me say what the next four are so that you have some sense of where we're headed tonight. The next one is for a different emphasis in Spiral Carpets, This Is How It Feels, which is more individual morality questions, I think, but I like it as an example of some really good computer art. Not as good as Sledgehammer and Peter Gabriel, but it's a good contemporary one. The next one is Aerosmith's Janie's Got a Gun.
Yes!
I'm curious, how many of you who are over 35 have ever seen this video? Okay, a few. It's, I think, if nothing else survives.
I sat around with my mom and discussed this video, actually. She saw it and really found it really interesting.
Okay, then
Janie, when we... Janie, well,
we'll wait to, if you'd like to talk a bit about that, that would really be fascinating to hear that two-generational conversation about it. Then the last two are on religion explicitly. Losing My Religion, the REM video that won every award going, and happens to be one of my personal favorites. And then I want to pair that with Madonna's Like a Prayer, because I think that's one of the gifts of contempt of 20th century art to the future. And we'll start then, just to give you a sense of the time. These all run about 4 to 5 minutes, so you can estimate. Don't hesitate to leave if you're getting tired. We'll do in spiral carpets. Just check to see if you have any reaction, and then go to Jimmy's Got a Gun after I do that check. I'm a little conscious of time, but I don't want to cut off conversation.
I have a question. Now, presumably the group conjures up its own song and music, but who creates the visual images?
there are people who are, in the last 10 years anyhow, who study computer art as an actual art form. And there are the same kinds of figures you need to produce a film. So there are the graphic artists, the producers, the directors. Sometimes, as I understand it, the groups are involved in the actual thinking through of the video. Sort of my paragon of sources. There is very little written about computer art and music videos, or about music videos in general. Very little written, and it's, you have to use some magazines to keep up at all, and even that's pretty sparse. So this is a very understudied aspect of contemporary culture, the visuals of music videos.
Throw back to the 60s, seen a Beatles style of music, but I was also happy music, the very sad message, kind of the, no, is it happy to be sad or does it have to be happy? And there must be exactly how the six-year-olds feel at the prospect of divorce, or at least, even if not divorce, the tension that seems incomprehensible.
Okay, the next one I think we need a lot of, I hope we need a lot of time to deal with, so I'm going to move us quickly to it. Could I solicit you for starting?
I think you just hit play,
just
on,
hit play on this one now.
You have any left?
Sure,
we can. Yeah, I don't even have a VCR at home, so if I'm seeming inept. I heard somebody said on the news a few years ago, and by 19 whatever, 100% of homes in the United States will have a VCR. I said, oh no. But I think I'm going to get one because I'm
pointed at them. Yeah.
I'm talking. This is Janie's Got a Gun by Aerosmith, a group from Boston. Directed right after she. How's it play? Maybe this remote doesn't work on the play.
Press the pause button.
Pause button again.
There it goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Talking about this one, I think, and I don't want to prejudge the conversation. Are there any initial reactions to it, comments or questions? Just initial, go ahead.
I had two reactions. One was, I was really struck by the blatant sexuality of, in the middle of the video when he was making love with that guitar. And the whole incestual sexual theme and the rage of this young girl. It didn't fit. It really didn't fit for me.
I noticed real quick how, at least especially at the beginning of the guitar solo, it all sounded totally discordant and really pretty ugly for an Aerosmith guitar solo, and then it sort of came together at the end, sort of.
If the whole thing was discordant, even the light was grating. You know, there were many times we got the spotlights right in our eyes. This was harder to watch than anything we looked at tonight. It just was discordant to the, just not very much pleasing about what came.
I experienced some of Jamie's rage and some of the despair.
Through the
images, through the story, seeing that confusion and the reaction in her.
I thought the line about run away from the pain was really disturbing, because I could appreciate, I think, on some level, why you would think that shooting them would stop the pain, but it doesn't. And giving the concept that it would stop the pain. And I guess I was hearing him saying it would stop the pain, and yet maybe that's the question.
Yeah, I think when she is caught, the expression on her face raises precisely that question. Did it stop the pain? And I think the question's open. I think it's a possibility that it will. And there's a possibility that it won't. And that's part of the dilemma of the situation.
I think it's hopeful that the vocals were done by a male.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a marvelous
development. I think it was also interesting that it came from Aerosmith, because a lot of their videos are extremely sexist. And I always found that, just like when this video came out, it was amazing that they were actually doing this video, because if you've seen Love in an Elevator, I mean, that's like, it was almost banned from MTV.
Although I must confess, and as a radical feminist, I hope you don't repeat this.
No chance.
Love in the Elevator is one of my absolute all-time.
It's a hilarious video.
Yes.
It's a hilarious video, right. But I mean, it's just like, it seems like they're, I mean, they used to be like the traditional heavy metal band and everything, and they've just taken this. I really appreciated this video. I was really impressed with it.
I think it's ironic that at the last scene where they're coming up from the bars, you know, she's going to go to jail for this after all that she's been through.
And the bars are also, my reading of that last image is the jail image, but it's also the bars of the estate where she lived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a mixed, it's a double.
I thought it was interesting that they showed the clip of the mother in there, and that she was a part of that too, and that it isn't just a matter of dad and the daughter, that somehow her ignoring that or not, you know, allows it to go on.
Ignoring clear. I thought her, when he's coming into the bedroom and she's standing there looking, I read that look as one of complete inability to know what to do. and ignoring is part of that. And, but that might be my wanting to say that. Yes.
I can remember when I was in high school and college, and I would hear music with that kind of a beat. You know, there's that, whatever that kind of beat is, and would hear certain songs with certain messages, and I would say, they're saying what I can't say, what I can't say, and how good that would feel, and why I would memorize the words, and I would turn the radio up as loud as I could, and not watching MTV now, I'm delighted to hear that there are still songs that that were strictly for pleasure, you know, sort of beyond the folk music stuff, but a lot of it was for pleasure, and all of it was to make a lot of money, which they all did. But there is something about music that hits our gut and allows us to say, yes, I do feel that. It is very difficult to feel the rage that a child like that must feel, but they certainly hit my gut now.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the main features of morality plays. It enables you to experience the situation of the other. At least to have an imaginative empathy for it, if not experience it.
And I just wanted to say something about Errol Smith, because you're talking about morality plays. If you listen to MTV, they're a good anti-drug band, which may not look like it. Because I listened to them when I was in junior high, and then they kind of died out. And they did an interview, and they said, well, we got into drugs and stuff so much, it was all on drugs. And we go, whoa, we got to pull out. And since they pulled out, they've come out with 2 hit albums. And they just recently signed the biggest record contract in history for 2 albums away that they haven't even written yet. I mean, so there's good, they're good role models in other ways.
Yeah, I was struck when we talked about the music just for fun versus music to make a point. I remember when I was younger listening to The Eve of Destruction, which probably a lot of people here did, by Barry McGuire. I saw Barry McGuire by himself at Grand College in South Dakota, and I requested him to sing that song, and he said he didn't sing it anymore because he became a Christian. And I didn't get it.
Any other comments? I hope that, yes.
Just briefly on what the woman down below was saying, I think it was true for my generation, and hopefully, like she said, for the continuing generations, that this music allows us to get out anger and other feelings that aren't socially acceptable, and in many of our families we weren't allowed to express. And you would crank up the stereo to scream because you weren't allowed to scream, or to cry, or to get out all those feelings. And I haven't watched MTV very much, but I was, in watching these, I'm feeling the same old feelings of the energy and the intensity and the urgency that I think I felt back in my teen years. And you somehow lose that or mellow it out as you get older. And it's good to see that it's still alive. We forget.
Yeah. It's one very good reason for reproduction, I think. And because it does mellow out. That has to be there, unless the species is just going to become blah.
Well, and I don't think you can continue as you grow older to stay with that intensity. I'm going to burn you out.
Yeah. Unless you climb mountains a lot.
In the 60s, it seemed to me that there was some connection between some of the music that was sung, some of the actions that many people began to take. There was a sense of coalescing, and there was also a sense of a growing sense of knowledge. People had a growing awareness of some of the problems and learned something about that so they could do something about that. Is there any kind of similar event happening now. It appears to me that the latest indicators are that, our kids are becoming less and less politically aware. They don't know who the leaders are. They don't know where, the major cities are. I mean, they don't know what's happening in Europe. You know, that's what we're reporting.
I don't think that's true.
Well, that's what they report in the papers, you know.
But the kids aren't writing the papers either.
Right. Two things that, I wanted to mention. One is, I remember watching MTV when it came out, or a couple of years after it came out, in when I was in 6th, 7th grade, 8th grade, whenever that was. And I'm struck by some of these videos. I think, I mean, the quality's obviously improved because it was a new thing, but I think there's a lot more political content lately than there were. I mean, initially it was all these Rod Stewart videos and stuff that was really boring, and I haven't watched MTV lately in 5 years. But to directly comment on what you just said, yesterday I read something that reminded me on a band called Midnight Oil from Australia. They had a song called Antarctica or One Place or something like that on their last album. And it's about Antarctica, and the statement it says is there has to be one place left untouched. And I just read yesterday that the world government signed a treaty that there won't be any mineral and oil exploration in Antarctica for the next half a century. And that's exactly what that song was talking about. And that song was saying, this has to happen. And now it has.
I had heard that.
Did the United States sign it?
Yes.
That's a miracle. That's a miracle. That's not moral. That's a miracle.
I see it in two areas, especially ecological concerns. I think are the most pervasive participation of youth in political change, but also in the AIDS crisis and response to it. I think that the newspapers are giving young people, especially high school and college age people, a very bad rap, because what happened in the 70s isn't happening anymore, and what happened under Reagan isn't happening anymore. And to give young people credit for a political astuteness that's there, I think, is our obligation as older people. Part of the Peace Corps teaching in the U.S. in the inner city that the young woman from Princeton started is another example. A lot of volunteering of time being done by college students and new grads. Well, let's do the last two, and is that agreeable? REM's Losing My Religion, and Madonna's Like a Prayer. Should we stop in between or do them together? What do you think?
Together.
They deal with similar themes, but not identical. Call out your history of religions, classes that you ever took, if you took any, because you're going to need them.
I saw you try.
Rape and saves the woman, but then is arrested by the police. So that is certainly one very major theme in U.S. culture. The instantaneous assumption that it is the African-American male who is the one who's doing wrong. And this is a critique of that, right?
But then is there something about she has to go to the church to get strength to go to do the right thing?
Well, so the second theme is Roman Catholic piety of a certain kind. which all of the, she comes from a Roman Catholic background and is in this video working through some of that. So the second theme is the relationship with the saint, which is complicated because the saint is African American. So that's a wonderful another layer.
It shows very well the implication, the involvement of Eros in agape.
What do you mean by agape?
Well, I'm thinking of Negrin's thesis that always has upset me, that he says that the love of God, the unselfish love of God, is the opposite of the desiring, seeking
love. Wonderful. That Roman Catholic piety, fortunately, never read Anders Nygren's book on Eros and Agape.
It wouldn't have affected them if they did.
Yeah, let's hope. Because here, there is no conflict between faith and erotic desire. Erotic desire is a vehicle of expressing faith, and faith encourages erotic desire. So that is another theme in the video. Is that... want us to talk about that a bit, or is it too late?
One of the things from the very beginning of Madonna is to cross all kinds of stereotype and value boundaries. The name of Madonna, and then the seductiveness and the sensuousness, and as he pointed out, the crossing of the boundaries, or the mixing of the boundaries, Eros and Agape, and black and white. There's just a harmony in the choir and her, and you know, there isn't any separateness, there's a blending of everybody.
Now, she is notorious for challenging stereotypes, which brings us back to Living Colors. We started out talking about types and stereotypes. Any other comments about it? So far we've got the strand of racism going. We've got of white racism and the response of whites to their own racist presuppositions. We have the question of police power and its culpability in that. We have the theme of erotic desire as an expression of religious faith. We have the question of Roman Catholic piety and how saints are used for the encouragement of faith. Anything else? The Black Choir?
There's a wonderful moment of the woman-to-woman connection, which never happens anywhere in visible life, where she's fallen and a woman catches her and they grin at one another. And there's the relationship to begin with, but a strengthening and affirming one. And they come back and dance together at the end.
And she tosses her back up into the air, which is a wonderful scene. And so far as I can tell, that woman is the ordained figure in this video. She's not the choir director because an African American man is directing the choir. So I think from the liturgical garb, she is meant to symbolize not an ordained Roman Catholic, because another mix is this is clearly an African American Christian tradition choir. Not Roman Catholic variety. So there's that another typical Madonna message is of the ordained woman functioning there, subverting again another expectation. But it's very unusual, but not completely rare, to find exactly what you point out, that female-female bond.
With the use of the curtain, obviously says this is a morality play. If you haven't caught it before,
And I suppose you've caught in the videos how many dream, how often dream was used as one of the themes as it is in this one.
Were there allusions to the church being present also?
Well, that's, what do you think?
There were several. One was, the saint is being unlocked. So obviously saints are locked up. And then the one at the end, the black man is looks like being put behind bars, and there's a jailer figure there. But the lights come up, and you're inside a church.
Yeah. I took the bars to symbolize the saint being separated from this world, but enters the world to do an act of communicating the need for justice, for a response to this injustice. That empowered her to carry it out. And then the saint then takes its place again out of this world.
People know that this video was banned in Italy. it was not allowed to be shown in
sacrilegious.
Oh, I ruined your Pepsi commercials. Go ahead. The image that came up for me in watching, especially in the part where he was kissing her, not at the beginning, but toward the end before she locked him back up, was Teresa of Avila and her whole image of God as lover. And that really, just what he was saying, the releasing, the bringing closer, but then sometimes we have to set God back, but that sometimes God can come that close to us.
Want to make any connections with that theme and the burning crosses?
I was just going to say that it's a two-way thing, because not only does the saint come and help her to do this act, but she releases the saint by the physical. You know, she kisses his foot and touches his face, which is obviously a very passionate and intimate kind of gesture to do to this being, which is supposed to be out there and other, and supposedly traditionally symbolizes a lack of that erotic energy, that kind of moment. And she, her passion, her faith is filled with that kind of passion, allows the relationship to happen.
At the same time, I think we don't want to underestimate the actual erotic piety in Roman Catholic veneration of the images. Because that's right out of, you can see that in almost any church that still is open to the community, Roman Catholic Church, that the kissing of the foot and the aspiration to obtain the stigmata, at least. So you're right, there is also that distancing, but I think it's less in Roman Catholic piety than we would construe it as Protestants.
Historically, orgasm sometimes occurs with ecstasy.
Exactly. And until we in Protestant traditions can start talking about the apprehension of the holy as maybe analog is even too weak, until we can talk about the apprehension of the holy and orgasm simultaneously as mutually reinforcing images, I think we're kidding ourselves about believing that the body is good because God created it good.
Well, you wonder what we Lutherans have been thinking about when we eat God.
Amen. Then we could get into some interesting feminist stuff on the Eucharist and what's going on there, but it's too late tonight. And I go, yes, but you're right. You're so right.
I want to change the subject a little bit. I want to ask a question that I wondered about for several years, and the REM video was an example of it. And I think I've only seen this when the music groups are on the video. I don't think I've seen it in concert, but where the musicians sing with almost a blank expression, very little facial expression at all, sometimes very little movement, although in the REM video he was moving his arms around a lot, but facially, the only thing that's moving is their lips. The words are coming out, and I've never quite understood that. You see it a lot.
Could we go back to part of your comment and then come back to that, to the facial issue? What did you make of the rest of his body language?
Well, it almost seemed like it was a seizure. I don't mean that to be funny. I mean it to be, it reminded me of, what was the singer years ago who sang like he was in Cedar Rock?
Joe Cocker.
It's like he's reacting bodily to what he's trying to get across, and it's just it's almost a muscular vomit. You know, he just can't control how his movements as he's singing, but it's all part of it.
It's how your body feels when you've lost your religion and you've tried several. If you saw Unplugged on MTV, where the group simply sings it without any of the electronic hyping it up and just sings it with regular guitars, his body is in the same agony. I suspect it's strongly autobiographical, but maybe he's just a good actor. I think the body there is the visual expression of what hopelessness looks like when you've lost what you thought gave you that center. The faces are another issue. My theory is that in some cases they are simply following the dominant photographic image out of Madison Avenue. If you page through magazines and look at the ads for Calvin Klein jeans, the ads for almost anything actually in black and white photography, you have utterly blank expressions on faces. What do you make of that? Go ahead.
I just went back to the dance. He dances like that all the time.
Oh yeah.
That's, I mean, it's not just to express, that's the way he dances. It's just like the way I dance. You know, I dance a certain style, that's the way he...
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that in the other videos, that motion fits as much with what they're singing about as in this one?
It depends on the person, really.
Well, all the songs are pretty angsty. I mean, R.E.M. doesn't sing any happy songs.
I wouldn't dance that way to the Living Color song because I move my head around more. I guess that probably with that style of music you would move your arms around more, and then with other styles you move your body up, you know. He does that to all. He dances like that to all.
That's a good point, because it would be unfair to take one video and pretend that it's the only one it is. So it's a very good point.
In an interview with him, he was talking about that that's a Southern expression.
Lost my religion is a form of saying I swore, I cursed.
I can't remember exactly what he said it meant, but it was a Southern expression that is quite common that he was using.
Lost my religion?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
It means getting laid for the first time, among other things.
Do you think that's what it means, Fred? Is that would you say that that's a primary meaning, though, in this video? And it might. You might. I didn't get that meaning
but
of it.
But that's that's one cultural meaning of it. If you made the reference to the Southern.
I think what takes it out of a purely Southern context is the use of the Renaissance imagery out of religious traditions and some later Spanish religious imagery, but
also the kind of the Eastern religion.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, we can go on.